Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Welcome to another edition of On the Continent, your one-stop shop for everything to do with European football. I'm Dotun Adebayo.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Lars Watson.
On today's edition, can Juve's 33-second wonder striker get them off to another speedy Gonzalez start when Villarreal come to play in the second leg of the Champions League cracker? It's 1-1 on aggregate. First leg honours are also even for two historically huge clubs of Europe. Will it be the Dutch or the Portuguese giants who live up to their historic pedigree in the decider? And Jose Mourinho, he sees red again. Andy was there to see the Roman candle flicker from one yellow to another and still come out with a result. Let's kick off with what was one of several great matches in the Champions League this week. Absolutely incredible. Villarreal and Juventus, it came out evens. Was that about fair, Lars?
I mean, I guess it was. It was one of the, I don't think any, either team were super impressive here now. I mean, we'll get on to him. I do think Vlahovic makes a big difference for Juventus because what's happened in recent weeks.
What a start.
Yeah, the goal was, it's the goal is great. And the way he gets around the pitch, he takes a lot of shots. You know, he just makes them look a lot more dangerous because the team as a whole is not looking that dangerous. I mean, Juventus recently, they've started grinding. Like they're not losing a lot of games anymore. They're picking up points. They're winning more than they're drawing, and they're not losing much at all. But as Nikki Bandini of this parish said on her very good Serie A podcast this week, you do find yourself watching Juventus and thinking, I know there are other things I could be doing with my time. it's not very thrilling. It just isn't.
True.
But that's kind of like, that's what it's been with Juventus recently. But I do think Vlahovic changes that a little bit. Because if they can be solid at the back and not concede and not give up much, and you'd expect, you know, Allegri to get that right at some point. And they have an energetic young buck up front who's used to kind of fighting battles on his own at Fiorentina anyway. You know, they could suddenly become a dangerous team again. But I didn't think they were super impressive here. And I thought it was kind of an underwhelming game because you have a Juventus who's not quite free-flowing and at their best. Playing against Villarreal who, you know, God bless him. Unai Emery obviously is good at these continental knockout ties. And you know, he's done enough. He's trying to find a way of phrasing this. He's done more than enough in the game for him to for the likes of me to sit here and tell him how to set up his team. Like, obviously. But you just also watch Villarreal a lot and you think, like, guys, you could just be a little bit more attacking than what you are. Because there's something slightly constrained about them and it's kind of frustrating to watch.
But part of that's an image thing, isn't it? Because I think when you think of Villarreal as, like, plucky European underdogs from a small town who've played some very attractive football in the past in that very attractive strip, and you just think, yeah, they're like crashingly realistic now. I mean, this is like a tie of the crashingly realistics.
Yeah,
Emery talked about how his team came back into this.
It sounds like a pop group. He's got
the crashingly realistic
from the 80s, perhaps. Yeah, I'm on your wavelength. I think when you look at this game and the way it's panned out and the way it looks as if the tie will pan out, it feels like it's going the distance. And I think you think of a lot of clubs and maybe even previous incarnations of Villarreal go 1-0 down in 30 odd seconds to Vlahovic, and as Lars was saying, magnificent goal, and that someone who's 30 seconds into a Champions League debut makes it not about that, because it's like, yeah, I belong here. Can we get on with it? The way he sneaks,
he looks like that.
Because the pass is not an incredible pass. It's a good pass, but he makes it look an incredible pass.
On his wrong foot.
With the control. Absolutely. On the wrong foot. You know,
and you can kind of tell that from the way that the ball is hit, that's not his favourite foot.
Because it doesn't take the net off. I suppose. But I think the way he sneaks in between one of the best old defenders in Raul Albiol, one of the best young defenders in Pau Torres, and the look on Pau Torres' face is like,
he split them.
Come on, man. Give me a break. He really did. And I think a lot of other teams, that sinks them. And like I said, previous incarnations of Villarreal as well just don't get up off the canvas from that. But Emery talked about it. He talked about the experience in this team. And as well as being like quite unromantic, this Villarreal, as Lars was saying, you look at some of those players, you look at Albiol, you look at Capu, you know, even Jeronimo Rui, the goalkeeper, he's been around the block, even though he's one of the younger players in the team. Moy Gomez, you know, so many of them, Trigueros, like, players who they've lent on for a while and have been around different places. You know, they've still got that little bit with the sizzle of Chukwueze and Jeremy Pino, who only gets a little bit here. There's a little bit more of that flair to go, I agree with Lars, but there's also something very logical about them edging themselves back into the game, and also about the way, and I know we'll come to Adrian Rabiot in a minute, but the way...
Do we have to?
Oh, we do have to. The way that for the equaliser, Parejo, who's not the fastest thing on two legs, gives him the slip, and he's got, I guess what they would say in Lockstock is, you've got that what's going on here look slapped all over your Chevy Chase, because Rabiot's, oh yeah, I knew I was meant to do something.
Something I was meant to do here.
And then he's
maybe track a runner, because I'm a central midfielder and I'm kind of meant to do that.
He's 10 yards away from him.
Not a runner, a jogger. Remember what Andy said?
Yeah, jogger. Yeah. A jogger, exactly.
Love me some Dani Parejo, by the way. If we're making a sort of list of... If we were to make a list of players in La Liga over the last decade who have been very good without playing for one of the big three, like, Parejo would be very high on this list. I mean, I think he's been slightly 100%. Unfortunate in his career. He was stayed at Valencia for too long. Maybe wasn't quite, you know, at the level where the offers came in. But he's such a lovely player. weirdly spent some time at QPR. We forget that.
That is one of those weird ones. Yeah. It's a Luke's game, catch you out, isn't it?
Oh, God.
We've all spent some time at QPR. Not playing, but, you know, about somewhere. I think that Lars summed this game up well, though, because I think from Juve's perspective, they would have looked very, very ordinary if it hadn't been for Vlahovic, somebody who we've talked about on OTC several times. And I don't think... I certainly haven't quite understood what difference he can make. I think in this Juve side, it's clear to see who's going to be the man of the match every single time. They need
100%,
him there. 100%. They need him there as much as West Ham need Antonio, able to play up front on his own, because it loosens up the midfield for them.
Yeah.
It just spreads them right
absolutely
across the pitch.
And it does speak to his mindset as well, Vlahovic, because he's still a young fella. To go straight into Juventus... And just, this is my team now. I'm going to be the main man up front here.
It did look
just
like
from
that.
Day one,
it
almost.
It did look like that. When he did,
he hasn't been like great McCauley. In every game. I mean, he wasn't great against Torino, but, you know, he's just looked the part, generally
speaking. It's breeding, isn't it? It's like Macaulay Culkin and Richie Rich, basically.
It's not really where I...
I wasn't going there either, mate.
Well, I was thinking, watching that first goal, maybe it's because... Maybe your brain goes there because he was linked with Tottenham and he was supposedly their sort of plan B if Kane managed to sort of get his will and get out of the club last winter, summer. And the fact that I maintain that Vlahovic looks a little bit like a Serbian Darren Anderson from certain directions. But there's something about the way he gets around the pitch and the way he's happy to shoot from any angle and the way he's very good at getting those shots off.
Croat, just to be clear. Yeah. I don't want to start any kind of...
I'm just saying, there's something about the way he moves and the way he gets his shots off that does remind me of a sort of young prime Harry Kane, really, in Vlahovic, the way he... there is something that to it.
That.
Of just not being afraid to shoot from various situations. And yeah, I like
it. Is the difference that Vlahovic... is going to stay right up there as a centre forward rather than go all over the pitch?
Well, we don't know, because I guess it took a long time for Kane to develop that. You know, a lot of time, a lot of freedom, a lot of autonomy in a certain team. Now, if Juventus grow at the level that they want to grow after they've gone backwards in the last couple of years, then Vlahovic doesn't get that sort of autonomy. He is a excellent player in a galaxy of stars. At the moment, you're right.
But he's got to be the main man.
But that's the thing. At the moment, you're right. Because of the squad. Because the squad is mid-build or mid-rebuild. Yes, he is the outstanding player. I don't want to be in that position, though. And, of course, Federico Chiesa is injured at the moment.
Resign.
He should maybe want to make that his team. But I think you do kind of come back to the recruitment with Juventus, because you look at Rabiot and how he's not really developed since he's arrived. What's his best position still? I don't think he knows the answer to that. He's not anywhere near where he should be. Super lucky to stay on the pitch after that horrendous foul on Chiquese. And as
it was a
high boot, saying,
wasn't it?
Yeah, studs on the knee.
Straight red for me.
Yeah, it couldn't have been clearer. So they've got away with that a little bit, Juventus. But I think Juventus still don't have that aura. The opening to the game suggested, yes, this is Juventus about to show you the aura. But the aura never appears. And I think going into the second leg of this, especially with away goals not counting anymore, and we keep saying this, don't we, in the last 16 of the Champions League this year, and we have to because it's a big thing and it's really
huge.
Affecting the competition.
Huge.
Absolutely. I think you look at the way that Juventus have fallen flat on their faces, particularly at home, in the knockout stages of the Champions League in recent years. You know, you think of Porto, you think of Lyon, you think of Ajax. I think... especially with that experience of Villarreal, especially with maybe them having a few more attacking tools going into the second leg, they have every right, Juventus, to feel a little bit antsy going into that. I don't think this is a given by any stretch of the imagination.
And I think that's worth saying and bringing it back to just contradict what I said in the opening. Because it's just me because I'm young and, you know, Andy, my mind wanders and I'm easily distracted by shiny objects. Is that when I watch Villarreal, I sometimes like, guys, come on, you can do, like, take some more risks and do some more stuff. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're right. It's 1-1 and they've stayed in it and they haven't conceded more goals in a situation where maybe you're right, Andy, it could have gone away from them. And they do go to Juventus, to Torino, knowing that you know, if they score an early goal there, you know, suddenly it gets really awkward for Juventus.
Yeah, I just wonder if there's the space there for those attacking players of Villarreal when Juventus push on to do something.
And we saw that in the game against Atalanta, the one that was postponed because of snow, that obviously Juventus don't empty themselves in the defence quite as much as Atalanta do. But they caught Atalanta on the counter very, very efficiently the last time they were on a away trip to Northern Italy.
Tweet from John here. Did Juventus make a mistake getting rid of Pirlo, who, for all his lack of experience, was at least bringing about some youthful changes to the team for the short-term appointment now of Allegri, which just doesn't seem to be working, Lars?
So I would say no. I think they made a mistake in hiring him in the first place. And I don't necessarily mean that as a slight on Pirlo. My point here would be, as again, I'm going to name drop her again, as Nicky Bandini always says, the thing about Juventus is, you know, their creed, their ethos isn't, their ethos is that winning isn't the most important thing. Winning is the only thing. So Juventus just isn't a club for someone who is developing and finding their way as a coach. Juventus isn't a club for someone to just bring in a bit of youth. Juventus is a club where you have to win every single game, every single title you're fighting for. That's where the bar is set for you. So I know they wanted, for the brand, they wanted Pirlo's celebrity status, and they wanted someone who's cool and looks handsome in a suit after the sort of slightly sort of building site manager ways of Maurizio Sarri, who just didn't seem a good fit. So they wanted the suaves of him. But it just was a really bizarre fit from day one. And it's kind of harsh on Pirlo, really, because he should have been, you know, finding his way in the game somewhere else at a club where he had a reasonable chance of building something and showing people what he can do. I think he was always out of hiding to nothing at Juventus, frankly.
Del Villarreal! Marca Dani Parejo! Estaba haciendo poco, pero solo necesitaba hacer esto! Un balón en el espacio!
Let's move on to talk about one of the other really exciting, I think, fixtures in the first leg of the last 16. And that was between two giants. I mean, iconic, legendary clubs, because they've been around for so long. They've both got history. I remember going to Lisboa once and talking to this journalist who was the archivist of Benfica. I went into his flat. Everything was in Benfica colours. Absolutely everything. Dedicated his entire life to this team. You get that kind of adoration for a team with pedigree. And the same for Ajax, who took a lot of fans, I noticed, down to see this fixture. And I imagine it's going to be the same the other way around now when we go back to Amsterdam. But for Benfica, this was a home result that they should have really won, I think.
I don't know, because Nelson Verissimo, the coach, said, I'm disappointed we didn't win it afterwards. He also said he was happy with the performance, which I think is fair. I felt going into this, if you look at this fixture in previous years, not just because of, as you say, Don, the historical resonance and the parallels, you'd think, because of the current economic situation, if you're Benfica drawing Ajax or Ajax drawing Benfica, what an opportunity to get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. However, you look at the current state of them. You look at Ajax this season. The discussion that we've had, and I suspect we'll continue to have, at least for the next 3 weeks nearly, of are they better than the 2019 side that got to the brink of the final? And I think there's discussion. Clearly, there's off-pitch issues with Ajax at the moment, which have rocked them, with the departure of Mark Overmars and how Edwin van der Sar and other elements of the club dealt with that or didn't deal with that. And I think the fact that Erik ten Hag, the coach, has kind of stepped away and say, look, we have to not think about the football side of it and just offer support to the victims that were harassed by Mark Overmars. On the pitch, it couldn't have been going much better. They look amazing. And I think you look at this, and at the start of this, I'm like, right, okay. Not just because they won 5-1 last time they were in Lisbon against Sporting on the first match day of the group stages. You look at this and you think, Ajax, especially if they start strongly, are going to trounce them. Because Benfica, not in good nick at the moment. had a very, very bad second half at Boavista at the weekend where they were 2-0 up and then just got punked in the second half. They did get punked. Johnny Knoxville was very much... It is black and white checks at the weekend. And I think you see them coming into that and you talked about the passion and the occasion and the setting and the history at the Estadio de Luz. And I think that's absolutely right. I think that is the difference between Benfica getting pasted in this and remaining competitive, because they are lifted by that crowd. Even when it's 2/3 full, the Estadio de Luz is very, very atmospheric. And when they go 1-0 down early on, when Dusan Tadic scores, you think, okay, here we go. They manage to get themselves back into it. They spend a lot of the half hanging on, even though they go into half-time 2-1 down, Benfica. The way they come out and impose their will on the occasion in that second half is very, very impressive, because they're a team that they've got nothing else to play for this season. They lost the Portuguese League Cup final. They're out of the Portuguese Cup. They're probably going to go and get themselves a new coach. There is so much up in the air, but there's just a sense of their better players looking at each other in that second half and going, come on, we're going to give this hell. And you look at Darwin Nunez, stands up, brilliant second half. Ajax don't really let him get into the game in the first half. And I think Adam Summerton, who was commentating on this last night, put it really, really well. He said, Darwin just refused to be locked out of the game. He said, right, this is a big occasion, and I'm going to force myself into this match. And that's exactly what he did. I thought young Gonzalo Ramos was excellent. Of course, he had the equaliser from Yaremchuk, and there's that amazing moment where he's taking his shirt off, and you know what's coming. You know there's the Ukrainian symbol.
It's going to be a lot
on his t-shirt.
There will be a lot of that. Oh,
of course, there will be, and he's being swarmed by his teammates. So you know, I know what's on the t-shirt, but get off him so I can see the t-shirt because you know it's a moment where you know he's feeling so much in the occasion, because it is a huge occasion. But I think the way that Benfica mastered the emotions of the occasion in the second half was very, very impressive. And again, it's another one of those ones, Lars, where the away goals not counting as extra makes an enormous difference to the second leg.
No, it does. It makes a big difference. And I'm just stuck with the Boavista edition of Punked. Ashton Kutcher running around in a residential neighbourhood in Porto, sort of annoying the locals. That'd be very, very good. Also, on Darwin Nunez, would you say that there has been some kind of evolution?
Oh, I knew it was coming.
I thought that was my line. I was going to wait for that.
It's like you're tied to a train track and the joke is coming towards you and you can't wiggle out.
See, like your Remchuk's t-shirt, I knew it was coming, but I still wanted it to.
Yeah.
always give props where it's due, and that is actually David Cartilage's, you know, so you can borrow it for now, Lars.
Which one?
Yeah, of course it is. The evolution of Darwin.
God damn it.
It's old as the hills. Trust me.
Well, it's been there since he was at Almeria, at the very least.
I thought it was there since the creation of time. Let's get back to this game. The reason why I thought that Benfica should have won it is because of that second half. First of all,
yeah, they were irresistible.
They were.
Half.
But even before that, you know, when you start seeing, defenders going up front, you know that they really want it. On the other hand, Ajax. Their main man, Sebastian Haller, my goodness, he was...
Too potent.
Exactly.
Cannot be stopped.
Too hungry for the Champions League goals.
but on both, in both
exactly
ends.
Exactly
right. Both ends. But what was he doing playing centre-back for that own goal?
No, he was just back defending, you know. Alaire is a man for all seasons. No, except
he
West Ham.
Wasn't supposed to be there. Yeah, of course. Okay.
You know, we posed this question earlier on the ramble last. I mean, Alla himself has said it just wasn't a fit at West Ham. You're a fan, and actually, we've had a tweet.
An enthusiastic
here,
one.
A very
In
enthusiastic
fact,
one.
I am the doyen of the Sebastian Alla is terrific society.
So stay away from that acronym.
Let the acronym there sink
in.
Oh,
my God. But we've had this tweet from Nathan here. It says, what do the panel make of Sebastian Haller's performances since moving to Ajax? He's been outstanding. Is it because the Eredivisie is lower in quality than the Premier League? Or is that too lazy a comment to make? Well, there's something in that, isn't there, clearly? But he's doing it a historic level in the Champions League.
Yeah, no, obviously, there's no secret. Being a number nine for Ajax in the Eredivisie is an easier gig than being a number nine for David Moyes' West Ham, just in terms of what's desired of you. I feel like I have to share with the listeners at home Dalton Adebayo's look and facial expression when he heard about the Sebastian Haller is terrific society. He was sort of, it was like he was teetering. He couldn't quite decide if he was delighted or disappointed in me. It was like a little bit of both.
I was trying to learn how to spell puerile.
Yeah, okay.
You come before the E or vice versa.
Yeah. No, but he gave, Sebastian Haller gave a very interesting interview to The Guardian this week, actually, where he spoke about the David Moyes thing, and the way he said it was because he was brought in by Pellegrini, Pellegrino were very different by Pellegrini, and him and David Moyes were kind of stuck with each other. You know, David Moyes wanted a different type of striker, and because, you know, they sit back quite a lot and they hit people on the counter and stuff. And when he was playing for West Ham, he was always very isolated. Haller, he was kind of, I remember looking at when he was struggling, because I've always been a fan, and I was trying to find out, like, why is it not working? And I remember looking at the stats, and he was sort of winning more headers than any other forward in Premier League. So he was like, he was winning the long balls. It was just, there was no one there to pick them up. And the striker at West Ham, and I know we're straying off base for on the continent, but the striker at West Ham has to do a lot of things. You know, the reason Michail Antonio is doing such a good job is that he's a bit of sort of an agent of chaos, like a one-man attack. He sort of can run at people and do loads of different things. Haller really thrives when he has people around him, and this goes all the way back to when he was so good at Frankfurt. It wasn't just about him, it was about the connection he had with Luka Jovic, it was about the connection he had with Rebic as well.
Yeah.
And it's probably not a coincidence that all of those three initially struggled after moving away from each other. I mean, Rebic did alright, but Jovic really wasn't the same, and Haller initially struggled. Now he's at Ajax. I think he's a club who, you know, he's been scoring goals, but he also has quite a few assists for them, because they're so much better at using him as a reference point in attack and getting players in and around him and not just leaving him to fend for himself.
I totally agree. And I think it's interesting that the goals kind of don't really tell the story about his technical excellence.
No.
About, you know, at the end of a game in which he missed a couple of sitters and scored that own goal, it seems a bit of an anachronism, obviously. But of course, having players like Dusan Tadic, who's still wonderful, Antony, who's going to be an absolute superstar, that clearly helps. But there's more of a potential for you to look horrendously out of place if you're not technically very, very good. And he is.
Yeah.
You know, there's absolutely no doubt about that.
Who's going to win the second leg of this, you think? Because it's a tight one, isn't it? I thought they were relatively evenly matched, but you're going back to Amsterdam now. Ajax, you've already suggested, were the favourites, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I think what is the difference between, we talked about the difference between Ajax now and Ajax 2018-19 when they got to the brink of the final. The interesting thing about that younger side, that Ajax side that we remember so well, and De Ligt, De Jong, etc., Ziyech, is that they struggle to emotionally master the occasions in Amsterdam. And because they were so brilliant on the road, because they won at Spurs, because they won the first leg, because they won at Real Madrid with some comfort, because they won at Juventus, we were so dazzled by that. It's like, well, hang on, they came up short in all the home legs. We talked about Lisbon and Estadio de Luz being atmospheric. Johan Cruyff Arena is atmospheric as well. And those younger players really struggled to deal with those occasions. And, you know, they got caught on the hop, and it took Real Madrid particularly taking their eye off the ball to give the inkling of that opportunity for Ajax to do their best at the Bernabeu, and how they took that opportunity. I think this is where that side is a little bit further on, because we've seen them in the groups be very, very convincing at home. You know, they absolutely hammered Dortmund. I realise that doesn't put them in a class of one this season, and Dortmund clearly have their defensive issues, but still, Ajax were excellent. I think that makes it a very difficult task for Benfica. Having said that, what Benfica have to go back and cling on to is the fact that if we were talking about the qualifiers, if you go all the way back to the qualifiers, which they're going to have to do again next season, is the way they got into the Champions League group stages in the first place. They really toughed out a win against an excellent, at the time, PSV side in Lisbon. And then they got a 0-0 draw in the away leg when Lucas Verissimo, the best defender who's currently recovering from a serious knee injury, he was sent off in the first half, and you're thinking, shit, they're up against it here. But they really knuckled down. And for all their flair players, they put in a really battling performance to keep PSV at arm's length and get themselves into the group. So they're going to need plenty of that going into the second leg.
Danny Blind alleen naar het doel van MVV. Gaat schieten? Nee, hij legt af. Overmars! Wat een treffer van Ajax hier in de Geuzelt. Applaus voor deze uitgespeelde goal.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Have you ever wondered what happened to all those space-age promises that previous generations thought we'd have by now? You know, heading out for the day on your own personal flying cars or working on a space hotel somewhere in the far reaches of our solar system. Where are all those amazing inventions? Well, we're here to find out more on my new podcast, Where's My Jetpack? I'm Sarah Crudis, space expert, TV host and author. Join me and Luke Moore every week as we look into retrofuturistic tech that never was to decide whether it's still just science fiction or if some of these discoveries are actually a lot closer than you think.
I think we're very close to that happening on an even more regular basis. And what I think is interesting about that, too, is that's going to make the accessibility of getting to space available for more and more people.
So, if you've ever wondered whether we'll one day speak to aliens light years away, or you'll be flying to work on a jetpack, this is the podcast for you.
Think of the car parking spaces. They need
to
be massive, really wide.
No, the wings can fold up.
Well, they don't exist.
No, some of the cars which were designed had wings which folded up.
Are you happy getting in a plane knowing the wings fold up?
Yeah. All right. I trust engineering.
Trust the science.
Search Where's My Jetpack on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where's My Jetpack is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
So Andy, you've been on your travels.
Yes.
And when in Rome did you do as the Romans do?
If you mean get apoplectically angry at their first half performance against Verona, maybe not quite.
Well, you mentioned Verona. What the Romans do when Verona come to town is say, two households, both alike in dignity.
Here we go.
Verona, where we are seen, at least allow me.
I feel like in this case, the two households were not alike in dignity. One was slightly further lower down than the other.
I take that back.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about two houses in dignity, you know, Lazio are not exactly in the box seat at the moment either. But the whole Roma situation is fascinating to me, and it was anyway. But what I think you get more of a sense of when you're there is we talked about it right at the beginning, and that when Mourinho signed for Roma, the way he was received in Italy, as you know, is the homecoming of, you know, one of the greatest of coaches. And maybe that's contextual because, you know, you look at the fact that Serie A on the benches is playing the hits this season. You know, we've got Allegri back, we've got Spalletti, we've got Maurizio Sarri at Napoli, Lazio, sorry. And, you know, we've got Mourinho. And, you know, the way that Mourinho was portrayed, it's like they felt that they were receiving 2010 Mourinho, which, as Lars, I'm sure, will be delighted to expand on, they're not.
Well, but it's kind of funny to me because we see this in this country, in the UK, often with things like when Cristiano Ronaldo comes back to United and when Gareth Bale went back on loan to Tottenham. So people have just not seen any of the things that have happened since they were last in the league. It's really funny to me that the exact same dynamic has happened here in Italy, that basically maybe they don't get the Premier League on TV in Italy. They haven't seen either Mourinho's United or his Tottenham team. That's just kind of flew them by entirely, or I don't know.
Maybe they get it, but they don't watch it because they think their football is,
I mean, to be fair, not watching his United or Tottenham's team would have been good life decisions at the time.
That is a good point, because you wonder, you know, did they not
Zing.
See? No, that's a very good point, because those are two spectacular failures, one after the other. And so that should raise the eyebrows, shouldn't it?
And what I think is more remarkable, though, is that that feeling has stuck. The fact that the Roma fans are so on side, or the majority of Roma fans, certainly in the stadium and the ultras, are still on side with Mourinho, which to me is remarkable. After that first half performance, which was, I can't think of a first half performance from a team in the flesh that I've seen that was worse than that 45 minutes against Verona. You know, and I've been to a lot of football this season. I've seen Manchester United in the flesh. My own personal team.
Been to a few Newcastle games before they started improving.
Yeah, my own team, who plays in League One, I haven't won for 13 games at the moment. But it was awful. There were no redeeming features to it whatsoever. And yet, you know, you go back to November and there was this banner saying, we will follow Mourinho into hell.
You don't have to. This is why you want to sit these people down and say, listen.
And then
you don't need to do this.
But then, you know, in between at the Verona game, I went 2-0 down with this awful performance, came back in the second half. And funnily enough, this is the twist on the Mourinho thing, that the young players, it was the young what done it. I think you look at the substitutes, you get the first ever goal by the 18-year-old Christian Volpato, who was excellent. Eduardo Bove made a difference as well. He scored the equaliser, first goal for the club at 19. Zalewski on the left-hand side, he was the most dynamic player on the pitch in the second half. And Mourinho, talking of playing the hits, when he takes issue to with a referee indecision. He's got the ball and is about to throw it back. He boots it into the stand instead, gets a booking. Later, his assistants hold him back from going onto the pitch and he gets a second yellow card, at which point he is roundly applauded by the Olympico crowd as he goes down the tunnel. And then on Monday at Trigoria in training, there's this banner saying, "Our passion, your know-how. This will take Roma on to further greatness." And you're like, will it? I find it's like this sort of Stockholm syndrome. I can't really get my head around. There are issues with the Roma squad.
Like, it is obviously laudable that they want to follow their manager into hell, but can we, as an original thought, hire a manager who just will take them somewhere else? Like, it just going to hell doesn't have to be the only option here. I just think it's, if we could just, I know it's really hard with Mourinho because there's always so much like discourse and narrative around him. But can you not just kind of strip it down for a minute and look at it? Just say that the coach is just a coach in charge. Mm. Or just let's pretend his name is like the Zarabi or so they hide someone fun. And Roma went out and spent more money in the window than anyone else last summer, which they did. And we're sat here in February after 26 games, and they're worse off than they were last year. If that was the case, and it was anyone else, you'd be saying, well, this guy isn't doing a very good job, you know. But because it's Mourinho and he's lighting all these fires everywhere, the discussion is always a completely different one. And obviously this tends to always feed into, is Mourinho past it, which is also kind of like a sidetrack, I think. I think the better thing would be to just watch the team play and ask yourself, is the coach doing a good job here? You know, do they have an identity? Is there anything they're particularly good at? And I struggle to find the answer to that here, really. And the fascinating thing is that because it's Mourinho, because he's picking all these fights and there's all this discourse around him, it's kind of distracting you from what's actually happening on the pitch.
But that's always a way.
We could maybe flippantly say that maybe actually starting these sort of bogus culture wars to distract the electorate from the fact that you're not actually improving their lives in any measurable way seems to be a winning strategy. I don't know where Mourinho has picked this up. If nothing else, he is a student of current events.
Do you want to kiss the flag as well? Getting into the politics of this, but Roma could perhaps have lost this. The coach gets sent off and it doesn't seem to affect them negatively. You wonder whether Mourinho has lost the importance of being Mourinho on the sideline, which is full of the antics that Lars says.
Yeah, I mean, they are miles off. I mean, they're miles off in statistical terms. You know, they're not making the top four. I had some, you know, when you get annoying online pop-ups. I had an annoying online pop-up that asked me, did I think Mourinho would
make the top four?
To guide Roma to the top four this season.
Pop-ups do you get?
The algorithms, it doesn't say much for me. I mean,
I was about to say what I get, but I suddenly just said nope. Step down a dark path.
The only pop-ups I get is Dot and Annie by Sebastian Haller in what was the other tea?
I get a lot of stuff about funeral homes and life insurance. I think the algorithm thinks I'm a very old man.
They meant for me, they went to you. Anyway, enough of the jokes. Mourinho, he lost his rag, but he hasn't lost Roma. For, you know, many other coaches, they'd be under pressure getting sent off like that. It's not a good look. It's not for the first time. But he's got his claws or his speciality firmly hooked into Roma and the fans.
I think there's still a belief in him at the moment. There's an interesting situation where he's got a two-match ban to serve, and so does his chief assistant, his goalkeeping coach, and the sporting director, Thiago Pinto, which is quite interesting. Now, Lars talked about the culture wars. The next step in that might be inviting Francesco Totti back to the club, because he fell out quite badly being a director of the club with the previous ownership, with Jim Pallotta, with Baldini, who he never got on with anyway. And if, like, apparently the relationship between them is quite good. If he brings Totti back into the club, it's just another layer of protection for him. But Totti always said he wanted influence. Whether he really gets that with Mourinho, who knows? but it's something obviously that would be enormously popular with the supporters. And bearing in mind that until, what, December, Totti had not been to a game for 2 years at the Olympico, which is unthinkable. Remember when he left Roma as a director, he said it was worse than dying. You know, he was obviously devastated by it. And now he was there on Saturday night, sat next to Daniele De Rossi, just in case you thought it was light on the symbolism. And now, you know, this thawing of relations, there's a lot that can be forgiven when, you know, that's the case. And I think Pelotta is still taking the heat for the state that the squad's been left in.
Do remember that you can tweet us at any point during the course of the week. You can tweet us at Football Ramble, at Lars Severston, at Andy Brassel, and at Dotton Adebayo. We've got a tweet here from Graham who says, is it inevitable now where championship stroke European places in top European leagues will be decided by playoffs after the Bundesliga record recent announcement? What was that announcement?
Well, it was about a survey put to various clubs asking if they would be interested in a sort of championship group. So like you have in Belgium, most famously, but also Romania, Ukraine, where there's a little cut-off point and then the top six like have their points reduced or cut in half and then play off for the championship. A bit like the NBA playoffs, I suppose you could argue. And there was a suggestion that this would be a remedy to Bayern's dominance of the Bundesliga. Firstly, I'm not sure if it is. Secondly, there is far from consensus over whether this would be something that the clubs are willing to accept. Interestingly, Bayern were more open to the idea than a lot of the clubs who would arguably, from some perspectives, benefit from it. So basically the clubs who aren't Bayern. I think this is a very long way off happening. I think this would be a little... It's far from inevitable because of that resistance. And I think as well, it would be a little bit too much of a move towards the Super League. To me, it's a cosmetic move. Especially in the case of the Bundesliga. If a team's, you know, 10 points clear and or more in the case of Bayern in some cases, or, you know, you could say if a similar thing was to be done in Ligue 1 with Paris Saint-Germain or whatever.
Or the Premier League, which arguably, you know, one or two teams run away with it.
So. Yeah, they've you know, there's still a huge lead at the top. With few games to catch it up. So this manufacturing of these, you know, blue ribbon matches towards the end of the season.
It's gerrymandering, isn't it?
It feels Super League-y to me. And which obviously I'm not hugely in favour of. I think as well it completely ignores what are the real issues. In terms of budgetary restrictions, in terms of fair competition, in terms of player hoarding. Exactly.
They don't want to deal with it. And I'd love to hear Lars's view on this as well, because as Andy's pointed out, there is a real fundamental issue in several leagues across Europe now, which is that one or two teams dominate because they've got a lot more money than everybody else.
Exactly. It's not a Bundesliga a problem. It's a super club problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the financial disparities of the Premier League or all the leagues in Europe is something that concerns me. I don't know what the solution is. I don't know how you sort of even out the differences. I mean, you can distribute the TV money better, distribute the UEFA money better, but you're not going to get the major stakeholders to agree with on it. The big clubs will just go away and make a Super League if you try it. I'm not entirely sure what the solution is. The playoff thing is funny. I conceptually don't hate the idea of a sort of NFL MLS style proper playoff at the end of it, but I'm such a traditionalist that I can think of it as a concept, and I enjoy the playoffs when they come around in MLS. But when I sort of sit down and try to think of actually having it in a league that I'm used to following, the reality of having an end of season sort of trophy playoff in the Bundesliga or in Serie A or in La Liga, it just feels really wrong. We're just not used to it.
As long as you've got promotion and relegation, you need to look at it from the sort of one division down, and then you get playoffs.
Well, we're kind of used to that. Maybe that's just traditional, but I just feel like the idea that we have leagues and then we have competitions next to it feels like a nice balance to me. The real problem, of course, is the stratification of the game and a handful of super clubs becoming richer and richer and sort of moving away from everyone. And the boring answer is, I don't know how to fix it. If I knew how to fix it, I'd be lobbying UEFA and telling them what to do. But I find it very, very difficult.
Gentlemen, your games of the week. We've teed it up by saying we've had cracking first leg dramas in the Champions League. Yep. That was this week. What's coming up?
I'm breaking all the rules. I'm picking a Thursday afternoon game. Thursday. Is the pod even out before this game starts? We don't know. But listen, if you are lucky enough to hear this before the game starts, you got to watch Bodø/Glimt versus Celtic.
Yes!
The return leg. Celtic,
this
go
is
up
a biggie.
Day. Celtic, go north of the Arctic Circle.
This is a biggie.
Already seen photos on social media today of sort of Celtic fans in the snow up in Bodø. Bodø, of course, surprising everyone and beating Celtic in the first leg. And I will also say surprise everyone. You'll know, listeners will know, there's no greater sort of flag bearer for the great cause of Bodø/Glimt in the English football media than myself. But I did not see the first leg result coming, I have to admit. I thought them beating Celtic, I thought they could have done it a few months ago, but they lost, over the winter, they lost their sort of chief ball-playing centre-half. They lost their left back, who was a really important attacking outlet. He went to Hertha Berlin. The centre half went to Schalke. They lost their sort of midfield enforcer in Patrick Berg, who went to Lens in Liga. They lost the centre forward Erik Botheim, who went to Krasnodar for like 10 million euros. So they lost four key players. And you're off season, you haven't played a competitive game for months. You've just played a couple of friendlies on a training camp, and you go straight in and have to play at Celtic Park. I didn't think they could do it against an improving Celtic, who very recently wiped the floor with Rangers, but they just went there and they were brave and they played their own game and they weren't cowed, and it was remarkable to watch.
They enjoy their football, don't they?
It was a really good game and
with such thrill, and I think they play with a little humility that you can almost see that they know that they're lucky, that, they're fortunate.
They're enjoying the occasion. What I thought was, the coach said before the game that what they were going to do is they were going to play their own game, because they reckon Celtic were not used to people coming to Celtic Park and just playing football and passing the ball. And people are usually a little bit intimidated by the atmosphere, and they were going to give them problems they weren't used to by going out and playing. And that's fine. It's easy to say that before the game. Not as easy to do it in front of everyone. And they did it so well. And so they've got a good sort of starting point for the return leg this afternoon. So if you can catch the game, just because I think it'll be entertaining. Celtic have to go for it. And Bodø/Glimt are a really good team to watch.
And of course, we need a food pairing to go with it.
You've got to have some fish. You've got to have some salmon.
It's not herring.
Salmon specifically.
Bodø/Glimt
are sponsored by a salmon company. So, you've got to have some salmon. Now, very specifically, this is slightly left wing. You can definitely go sushi here. Because one of Bodø/Glimt's things is that the club holds the Guinness World Record for the largest ever sushi mosaic. which they created as part of the 100-year anniversary celebration a couple of years ago. So they made a giant sushi mosaic alongside their partners, of course, which was 56 square meters big and included a whopping 800 kilos of salmon, 400 kilos of rice, 200 liters of rice vinegar, 480 kilos of cucumber, and 10 kilos of chives. I can't imagine. So they've made a very, very big sushi mosaic.
Well, before that,
I kind of hope things got eaten. I mean, it would have gotten really stinky afterwards.
Before that, I was going to say, with all that sort of lovely transfer money making its way up to the Arctic Circle, I'm expecting a pretty good present off Santa next year. But I guess they've spent it all on sushi already, right?
My thought was, if they didn't make it into the Guinness Book of Records after all that, some of those fish would be gutted.
Oh my God.
Moving swiftly on.
Yes.
There are two huge games in La Liga on Sunday. The first one, I will be doing a viewing party in Newcastle.
At yours?
No.
Because I was going to come around with uninvited.
With La Liga for El Gran Derby between Sevilla and Betis. That's 3:15 in the afternoon. It's going to be terrific, especially with them flying high in La Liga. If you're not around and about to come down, I would suggest that you watch Barcelona versus Athletic in the evening. Of course, Barcelona will be coming off their Europa League trip to Napoli, which is not easy. Barcelona greatly improved. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, a hat-trick at Valencia on his debut, following the footsteps of another French speaker in Thierry Henry. But Athletic have been terrific in this last couple of months. I know our man Cartledge is a big fan. I think this is going to be an absolutely huge game.
What are you going to eat with it?
Leftover sushi, I think.
Bring it.
It doesn't travel.
Ulrich Saltnes til verden.
Takk skal du ha.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously,
man. Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.